Good morning to you. Welcome to our early morning Christmas gathering here in the Pebble Mill Studios in Birmingham. And as you've joined us at this early hour on Christmas morning, you may well be on your own, or on the road, or on the move already in the kitchen, or just an inveterate early riser, as I used to be. Whatever you're doing, we hope you'll stay with us for the next couple of hours as we start Christmas Day with an informal assortment of Christmas stories and music. Some very familiar, some that may be new to you. And, of course, Christmas bells and the story of Christmas itself. There'll be a number of guests joining us with something Christmassy to talk about or sing about. Jerry Priestland, mercifully, will only be talking.
Well, John, in spite of numerous requests for one of my trombone solos, but here we are today like a couple of prickly old Christmas trees festooned with pretty baubles, if that isn't a rather frivolous way to describe Delia Smith, Bob Arnold, and later on Fiona Shaw and Timothy West. They set a high standard from the start, some sweet rejoicing from another place.
Jubilo, not jubilo, by saying over and over to myself, hey there, you below. It's a German traditional carol, you will well know, arranged in that case by John Rutter, and that was the King's Singers. I'm sure you recognise that.
Now, I have an urgent announcement here for any dames that may be listening. Will you please get up and bake your pies? It's Christmas Day in the morning. Time, in other words, for a spot of feasting. I was looking the other day through an anthology of feasts that somebody's just brought out. Interesting how food seems to inspire English writers. Now, it reminded me that there's a splendid description of Christmas at New College, Oxford, my old college, incidentally, in Parson Woodford's diary for 1773.
He now lives in my old Norfolk, or used to.
We had a very handsome dinner of my ordering, as I order dinner every day, being sub-warden. We had two fine cods boiled with fried soles round them, an oyster sauce, a fine sirloin of beef roasted, some peas soup and an orange pudding for the first course. For the second, we had a lease of wild ducks roasted, a four-quarter of lamb and salad and mince pies. The wine drunk by the senior fellows, the house pays for. I supped, etc., in the Chequer. We had rabbits for supper, roasted, as is usual on this day. The sub-warden has one to himself. The bursars, each one apiece. The senior fellows, half a one each. The junior fellow's a rabbit between three.
Basic man, Parson Woodford, Western Longville, of course, he was the parson of, and like a good many parsons in those days, he was not averse to buying smuggled goods from the local smugglers. I think some of the rum that he drank came from the local smuggler called Andrews. He even put his name in his diary and revealed all.
Oh, and learned something every day. He was a notable trenchman, of course. There's another great feast described by him, an even bigger one, in which he was joined by a bishop. Bishops did very well in those days.
More difficult now. Parson has to look after seven parishes, not just Western Longville.
Cambridge Singers, under John Rutter, decking the hall. I must say I like a hall decked with greenery for Christmas. Can be very fragrant, but unless you live in the country, it's jolly expensive these days. Up my way in North London, you'd easily pay 50p for a withered branch of anonymous shrubbery, which you can't even eat. And speaking of eating, down in one of our studios in London, and I do mean deep down underground, is Delia Smith, the cookery writer, and what is just as important today, enthusiastic Christian. A Merry Christmas to you, Delia.
A Merry Christmas to you, Jerry, and John, everybody there, and a Merry Christmas to everyone listening from me.
But, Delia, doesn't a Christian conscience sit a little uneasily with feasting these days?
Not at all, no. I'm delighted to say that all through the Old Testament, feasting is featured quite largely. And in the New Testament, the Christian Testament, is all about the heaven being a kind of messianic banquet. And I always think that we can praise God and enjoy God by praising him with feasting and enjoying the good gifts he's given us. I don't believe in having a false guilt about it.
Well, certainly our Lord, while undoubtedly virtuous, was quite a one for the cakes and ale himself. In fact, he was criticised for it. After which, of course, he went forth onto the hillside and shared what he had with thousands. So we mustn't forget the starving, must we?
No, I think that's very important. I like the little quote. I'm not sure which book it comes from. You could tell me, Jerry, that. But I like the little quote in the scriptures. Go eat the fat, drink the sweet wine, and don't forget to give a portion to the man who has nothing. And I would say that sums up my view. I think we should enjoy feasting. This is one of the greatest feasts in the calendar, and we really need to enjoy it. But at the same time, obviously, we have to share. That's very important.
I think it's really essential, certainly to the old Christmas, which was very much a time when the rich, when landlords and employers were expected, I suppose you might say, to fatten up their employees and their tenants against the harshness of the coming winter.
Yes, that's very true. I remember the cottage pig being fattened up and made as fat as possible, and then all the fat being used to keep, you know, people healthy throughout the very hard winter months.
But Delia, there must be some people listening who are rather pained by all we've been saying, who are conscientious vegetarians and very upset at the mass execution of birds and beasts that Christmas does involve.
I think the mass execution of birds and beasts goes on all the time, not just at Christmas. And I do understand, and I am sympathetic to people's views. I'm afraid they're not my views. I'm much more of a Parson Woodford type myself. But I do understand, and I enjoy eating meals without meat just as much as I do with meat, but I'm afraid I also enjoy my turkey.
I think when you and I sit down to our feast, we will begin by saying a grace which thanks God for the gift, for the care of these creatures of his, which are for our use.
Yes, I think that's very true. I think we need to appreciate it. What I find most distressing is the kind of mass production of meat. I would rather eat far less meat and have it kind of free range. I mean, one can sort of eat free range lamb and free range turkeys and chickens if possible. But I think sort of barley fed pork and barley fed beef that are forced to eat and never kind of, they don't see the light of day, then I think that is atrocious and should be avoided. And the quality of the meat isn't good to eat anyway.
Delia, is today going to be a particularly busy day for you?
Well, it always is. I'm not in charge of the Christmas lunch this year, but I shall be...
How did you manage that?
Well, because large family gatherings, my mother's going to be the kingpin this year. And seeing as she taught me how to do Christmas lunch anyway, it's all in safe hands. But we have a busy day. We tend to... Normally I go to Mass at midnight, but this year it's in the morning. And I'm going to have, probably a nice big lunch, and then after that we'll have a present opening session that usually lasts a long, long time.
I'm sure both of us remember the Christian feasting goes back into Jewish feasting, to the meal which unites the family, as yours will, and my experience is that these Jewish meals used to include a lot of fun, little songs, games, stories and things. Do you have that kind of thing?
No, we don't have games and stories, I'm afraid. We all sit round and do the Christmas quiz in the newspaper. We all have a lot of fun doing that.
Good, well,
trying to test our general knowledge.
It's not just an occasion for stuffing yourself. Thank you very much, Delia Smith, and enjoy.
And you. Thank you.
St. John's College, Cambridge, and not of another place, conducted by George Guest, singing Good King Wenceslas. And according to my references, there were four or five Wenceslases, mostly kings of Bohemia. Some were good, but some were horrid. However, there was only one saint who lived in the early 1900s, had a wicked mother called Dragomir, and was murdered at the church door by an even wickeder brother called Boleslas. Not many people know that.
I can't imagine that more than one mother would call her son Wenceslas. Poor chap. Wenceslas, I can understand. But it's interesting that distribution of Christmas goodies by the good king. I mean, it used to go on, as you were saying, in the country with Squire. Squire doesn't do quite so much of it these days. It all comes from the local charities, which are at the same time a great boon and a great problem for the local people, because nobody knows who to give the stuff to these days. It's very difficult to find someone who is really poor, even in whatever one may think. I'm afraid our village has got round it by giving something to everybody. They've just sort of split the thing up and said, we'll save an awful lot of argument, we'll give something to everybody about the same amount.
Where do you live, John?
I'm not telling you. I kept out of your conversation, certainly, about all that mass killing of birds, because living in the midst of a mass killing area, I should be very unpopular, whatever I said. I don't know which side I'm on there, because we have almost a tame pheasant that wanders around the garden. We call him Fred, the fat, friendly pheasant, who has survived two seasons so far. We're keeping our fingers crossed for this season. He's all right at the moment. On the other hand, I think pheasant is absolutely delicious. I like to have my pheasant and eat it, I'm afraid. I would like one in the garden and one on the plate, which I suppose sounds dreadful.
Well, I do agree with you on this, actually. I'm very partial to a pheasant myself. What about carol singing around your way in Norfolk? Much of that go on these days?
A lot in the bigger villages. They have not penetrated to our fastness yet, I'm afraid. It takes a good car ride to get to us from almost anywhere. They'd be very welcome if they did turn up. We should be so amazed to find somebody at the door. We'd probably ask them in for a couple of days.
I made an interesting little discovery the other day. That actually, while shepherds watch their flocks by night, goes very well to the tune of On Ilkley Moor Bart Ash. Right.
You're not going to do it.
I'm not.
No.
I was warned about that.
Let's go to safer sort of music. The sound that greets the villagers of Downton in Wiltshire every Christmas morning. But not at this comparatively civilised hour of the morning. The Downton Huntsman Band starts its serenade at 4 a.m., a tradition which has been received in the main with remarkable tolerance by the good folk of Downton.
As you lie in bed and listen to them, it's a lovely sound here, I think. We hear them coming, you know, where they stop, and then they move on again, then they gradually get nearer.
And it's nice to sort of open the window and see what looks like a nice Christmas card with the thatched cottages and this lovely band.
You sort of wake up, your eyes are sort of wide open, but you can't see anything. And you sort of stick your hand down the stocking and you sort of tip it upside down, it all falls on the floor.
I can foresee, really, that it could be a bit of a surprise to a lot of people who come into the village new and don't know about this lovely Downton tradition of the band coming. And maybe if they have young children, it will come as quite a shock.
We run into Mum and Dad's room and jump on them and everything. And then we go downstairs and Daddy opens the door with just his gown on and we watch the band walking down our road.
The lights come on in the bedroom and probably the curtains would go back, the window come open, and when we'd finished they'd shout out Happy Christmas to you.
Then you see little faces, you think, oh, Father Christmas has been, and some fathers in the barn thinking, oh no, the children are up, hoping that they'll be in bed by the time they return home.
It must be awful getting out of bed at 4 o'clock in the morning. Bad enough being woken up at 4 o'clock in the morning.
There was one instance, actually. We were playing down the bottom end of the village, and every time we struck up a carol, a donkey had joined in, and every time we finished, he stopped.
Had an Eric and lantern, on a beanstick, and they used to form a circle round for the light to play, you see. The instruments froze.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it was so cold. The valves froze on the bass, and we had to unthaw it from place to place. When we go to the next place, we had to unthaw it with our hands before we could get the valves to work again.
We were playing, and round the corner came this figure. He must have been about 75 years of age, dressed in a white vest and a pair of shorts, and jogging. And the band just went into total collapse when he ran past, and it took them about 5 minutes to regain their thoughts, only to turn around and see him coming back in the opposite direction. And all he reminded of was a turkey for ready for the oven, because he was all pink and goose flesh.
Quite a busy evening, all the family around and supper and whatnot, and settled everybody down, listened to everybody coming out of midnight mass, sort of wishing everybody a happy Christmas outside the bedroom. Eventually got to sleep, suddenly woken up to the most amazingly loud sound. Downton band playing outside the windows, and obviously they settled in there underneath the lamplight, by which time, of course, you know, the children were down to the tangerines at the bottom of their stockings, and I think we had about 6 children under the age of 3 staying or something incredible, and sort of everybody's windows open to see what was happening. People totally wide awake. To cap it all, my husband's aunt, who was staying, felt most indignant about this and was frightfully worried about all the children. So rushed outside, and there she was, trying to get these words out, because the band thought she was saying, oh, lovely, and everything, and just carried on playing blissfully with poor Barbie standing there trying to shut them up.
I remember a lot of shouting on my great-aunt's part and a lot of confusion on the band's part. I think they were surprised and shocked at this old lady of 80 coming out and shouting at them with no teeth in. I would be.
I think the band were absolutely devastated, because I don't think anybody'd ever done that before.
But we wished her a Merry Christmas and and we moved down the road. So still and quiet, and obviously the Christmas tree lights reflect on the river, and I find it very moving. That is really part of Christmas.
It's giving back something to the people of the village, I think.
In this rather commercial world we live in, it is very nice. It brings back the true spirit of Christmas.
It's almost as if the hills and the pillars all around the village were singing to God on his birthday.
Thomas Hardy about that. Must say, even more alarming, the prospect of having the valves freeze is, to me, I mean, having your mouth frozen into the mouthpiece is a grave danger. Couldn't get the thing away.
You've done that sort of thing. In fact, we would provide quite a useful combination for the Downton Huntsman Band, because I've got up at 4 o'clock in the morning a few times, so you have blasted on a trombone a few times.
Well, yes, indeed. I have, very inadequately. Actually, a friend of mine was a trombonist in a regimental band one. Told me a lovely story about how he was on parade on a very frosty morning, and the trombones would always have to march in the front row with these slides darting in and out. And he was what they call a rather wet player. The saliva, shall we say, tends to collect in the bends And it collected in the big bend of his trombone, froze absolutely solid, and he puffed like mad to get it out. Eventually he dislodged it, it flew out of the trombone, hit the regimental mascot in the backside. It was a particularly malodorous goat, which took off across the parade ground and ruined the entire parade.
My nearest connection with that sort of thing is my son did learn the tuba at school, which was a very fraught period, because we had to get this tuba to and from the school. There was a firm rule that cars were not allowed to proceed up the drive to the school itself. And we eventually got a tuba pass. We were very proud of this. We were allowed, on the strength of this tuba pass, actually to drive into the school with this tuba, to the envy of all the other children who were merely playing the little instruments and didn't get that sort of excuse.
I sometimes wonder if we haven't become a little too sensitive at times about banning any sort of joyful noise in this day and age. People are, rather sort of plaintive about anything that disturbs absolute tranquility. I like to hear a band in the street or in the park.
And at I'm 4 glad. In the morning?
Well, once a year, after all, yes, why not?
But on Christmas morning, appropriate.
Christmas morning is going to be pretty chaotic anyway, isn't it?
I should have given credit there, incidentally, to Andrea Adams, who gathered all those views on the activities of the early morning band, and who actually lives in Downton herself. I don't know, she very discreetly didn't mention her own reactions to being blasted out of bed by a brass band at that hour of the morning. Now we have some very pleasant music for you, and this is what we call live, because here they are in the studio, and they've been incredibly quiet for the last 25 minutes. You may have think we've been alone here, but the boys of the Coventry Cathedral Choir have been sitting quietly here, and actually laughing at some of the jokes to their enormous credit, and they're about to sing two songs for us, and we've both been arranged by their director of music, Paul Wright. They're going to sing Up Good Christian Folk and Past 3 o'clock.
And a cold frosty morning.
Of Coventry Cathedral under their director of music, Paul Wright, who are here in the studio with us. While the boys take their seats again, Paul is hobbling across to us. You look in a rather sad way, Paul. What's been happening to you?
Well, we've had a very busy time at the cathedral, as you can imagine. We had a big concert on Saturday evening, and at the end of that there was staging and lighting and goodness knows what to come down, ready for the Sunday morning service. And a little thing got forgotten. We had a presentation by the Sunday School in our morning service, and we got there at 9:20 to find they'd forgotten to put the staging up for that up the other end. So I hurriedly went up with the verger to help him put it up, and the whole thing collapsed on my leg.
Ah.
So I've got a rather mangled right leg at the moment.
Oh, well, noble effort for turning out in spite of it. Thank you. And that means that's part of the activities that the boys, I mustn't call them children, this is very important, we don't call them children, the boys are having this Christmas time. What sort of a programme have they been following?
Well, quite a busy one, really. I mean, there have been so many carol services in the past few weeks, not all of them sung by the cathedral choir, but quite a number of them, and then they get asked to do various other different things during a very busy December.
Now, tell us about the boys, because you don't have a choir school, do you? You can speak quite freely, they're the other side of the studio. They can't grab you. Now, where do you get the boys from? How do you find them?
Yeah, well, the boys come from different schools all around Coventry. As you said, we don't have a choir school, and in fact, we operate like a parish church. We are a parish church cathedral. And we rely very much on parents bringing the boys in the morning and to the various choir events. We don't have thousands of boys queuing up to join the cathedral choir. In fact, I have to spend quite a lot of time going around and visiting schools, talking to heads, taking assemblies, hearing classes of children sing, just to see if there's any possible potential talent there. And if I come across something, then I'll contact parents and say, had you thought that your son might be interested in singing in the choir at Coventry Cathedral? And it goes on from there.
Having recruited your boys, what's the secret of keeping them together, keeping them willing, keeping them apparently enjoying it?
Mars bars. The odd broadcast, so they get a bit of pocket money. The odd trip abroad. And I think they do enjoy, though they might not admit it, some of the sort of special events that go on at the cathedral. And I think there are some that do even enjoy the sort of routine, I think, that builds up with the morning practices and weekly services. A lot of coughing and spluttering in the background. but they do get, I think, quite a lot of pleasure from it.
I remember Alan Wicks of Canterbury Cathedral saying that something does actually seem to rub off on boys who sing in choirs, a sense of discipline, perhaps even of taste for what is first rate.
Yes, I think that does come into it. I mean, certainly the need to be very formal and disciplined at times in certain situations. You know, they develop and learn the ability to suddenly switch on and do what is needed of them in terms of behaviour, a procession, something very formal for the cameras or in front of 2,000 people. They can do that and they can stand up and perform in front of a large number of people, whereas the minute the green light's off, as it were, then they'll sort of lark around like any other kids and drive us all around the bend.
And give some rather disconcerting replies when they're interviewed, I gather.
Right, yes.
Tell us about Radio Guernsey, wasn't it?
Oh, yes, I shouldn't have told you that, should I? No, a couple of years ago, we were out in Guernsey doing a tour of the Channel Islands, and I think there was an interview with our then head chorister by someone from Radio Guernsey, or whatever it is, and he said, what do you enjoy least about being in the cathedral choir? And without hesitation, the lad replied, singing.
Collapse of sound.
Would they really rather be playing pop music than watching television, do you think?
Yes. Well, I think they would, but I think...
Unanimous vote over there.
I mean, there are times when I think they're probably quite glad to do something different. I mean, this week, for example, I think coming over and doing various other bits of singing and pantomime visits, you know, do give them a break. And certainly cathedral activities give them a break from, you know, the routine of watching telly. And I mean, even my two girls, you know, said the other morning, oh, we've had enough watching telly, and just went and flicked it off, which is great, you know, you feel achieved something there.
And this is a special year in Coventry Cathedral, of course, the 25th anniversary of the new cathedral and hanging of the bells. This is quite a big occasion for you. That was last, was it spring or June time?
Yes, it was in May.
In May.
Yes, because the cathedral was, of course, consecrated in 1962 on the 25th of May. And so 25 years later, May of this year, we had a special service to celebrate that. And it was at that service that the bells were actually rededicated by Lady Lyons, not having rung as a sort of proper peal of bells since, I think, way back in the 19th century. And so they got a special ringing chamber now, and they rang up then for the first time, apart from a very brief preview a few days before when the provost allowed them to be rung out for the cup final, Return of Coventry City.
Really?
Yeah.
Because the story of how they came to stop ringing is rather unusual, isn't it? The fact that they took out some of the floors in the tower.
That's right. They suddenly discovered that there was some rather beautiful ceilings, and the architects suddenly got very excited about what they found in the tower. So they took the bells out and took various floors out and scoured the inside and found all sorts of lovely things. But they rehung the bells then, sort of early in the 20th century, but they could only chime the hour. They weren't actually proper ringing bells.
Because the architects wouldn't allow them to be rehung where they could be rung. They wanted
right.
to see the pretty ceiling.
That's it. They had to sort of hang them somewhere else.
That seemed pretty hard, but they're back in the right place
They
now.
Are back in the right place now and ringing out full 12 bells, and it's a beautiful sound.
Well, now tell me about another feature of Coventry Cathedral, the carnival band and Maddie Pryor. Tell me about Maddie Pryor.
Yes, I suppose my connection with Maddie Pryor is really through the National Children's Home. I do a lot of things for them in terms of musical and special events. And in fact, this Christmas we took the St. Michael Singers, our Cathedral Choral Society, down to Canterbury Cathedral to do a special National Children's Home carolcade. And David Kossoff was in fact the guest at that one, leading the event through. And I've also done a number of things at the Royal Albert Hall for NCH, and a big commemoration service at St. Paul's Cathedral only this autumn. The boys of the choir have been down when we sang at the Albert Hall a couple of years back in front of the Queen, and it was at that event that Maddie was singing with Rick Kemp and Steel Eye Span, and she also came and sang at St. Paul's Cathedral, and so we met up again this past October, and she sang Streets of London in the NCH service, along with Ralph McTell, who actually came along and played for her.
Were you involved with the carnival band meeting between Maddie and the carnival band?
No, not myself.
No, that was fascinating, because apparently the carnival band, I suppose you know, they performed medieval music, Renaissance music, and they seem to get on extraordinarily well with Maddie Pryor. They recorded some Christmas carols together for BBC Two up at Scotby Village Hall, like near Carlisle.
That's where they live now.
The research has gone into this. Apparently it was such a success that they decided to do it again a couple of years later. They met in similar circumstances, this time an 18th century Quaker meeting house near Bristol, an interesting point for you, Jerry, and they made the record from which this is taken.
Rejoice and be merry. A heavenly vision.
Rejoice and Be Merry from A Tapestry of Carols, recorded by Maddie Prior with the Carnival Band. And I must say, one of the joys of my earlier middle age was to watch those little dances Maddie Prior used to do with Steel Ice Band in the old days. Warmed me old heart.
Ah, now here's another figure to warm everybody's heart, not only in these parts in Birmingham, but all over the country. Anybody who's ever listened to the Archers and who hasn't, there's a man called Bob Ardle just arrived, or Dom Forrest, as everybody knows him as. Hello, Bob.
Hello and good morning.
Nice to see you. Now, we're not going to talk about the Archers, miraculously. It's very difficult to avoid it, but not for the moment anyway. Let's talk about your other character as a folk singer. Now, this is how you began. On your early days, you did a lot of folk singing.
I did indeed.
How did that come about?
Well, I'm going back now some 77 years when my father and my grandfather, both in their turn, kept the village pub. Mm-hmm. And, of course, there were no radio, television, or anything else to entertain the old boys over their glass of beer. And so they all, each night, sang their old song. Sadly, my bedroom was up above the tap room. And I had to listen to these songs, and I could say, well done now, because I learned them.
All you needed was a Downton Huntsman band to turn up at 4 o'clock. You wouldn't have got any sleep at all.
I shouldn't indeed.
Tell me, are there still real folk who still sing real folk songs anywhere?
They are getting very, very scarce now. I did come across a very, very nice carol that an old friend of mine collected some 40 or 50 years back down in the Forest of Dean. A song that I don't believe has ever been published. He gave it to me, he noted the words down, and sang the melody to me, and that's the only copy of the song that I've got.
You going to sing for us?
I'd like to. Now Joseph was an old man, and an old man was he, and he married Mary, the Queen of Galilee. And he married Mary, the Queen of Galilee. Now Joseph and Mary, walking down the garden green, where the cherries hang heavy on every limb, where the cherries hang heavy on every limb. Pick me some cherries, Joseph, pick me some cherries, do. Pick me some cherries, Joseph, that I may have a few. Pick me some cherries, Joseph, that I may have a few. Then up spoke old Joseph, with his words so unkind, let the man gather the cherries who owneth the child. Let the man gather the cherries who owneth the child. Then up spake our Saviour, all in his mother's arms, bow down, thou blessed cherry tree, that Mary may have some. Bow down, thou blessed cherry tree, that Mary may have some. Then the very top branches bowed down to her feet. Now you can see, Joseph, there are cherries for me. Now you can see, Joseph, there are cherries for me.
Well done, well done.
There are other sort of versions of cherry tree carols, aren't there, but one's heard. And interestingly, they all seem to go back to one of the old sort of unofficial gospels that didn't get into the Bible, which describes how Mary and Joseph and the infant Jesus are fleeing into Egypt, and they're in the desert, and they have nothing to eat or drink, and they see a palm tree. And originally it's a palm tree that bends over and offers its dates or coconuts, from
just
what I know.
So and they've already turned cherries.
When he got to Europe, they turned them into cherry bumper.
Tell us more about those early days, Bob, in the pub. What were Christmases like in those days?
Well, Christmas in those days, you had to make your own entertainment yourself, quite naturally. And we as kids, of course, at the moment this Christmas was over, we looked to the next one. There was a marvellous treat laid on by the Lord of the Manor. They gave us kids a marvellous treat, and my goodness, a treat was a treat in those days, believe you me. They gave us an item of clothing, which miraculously always seemed to fit, and they gave us a wonderful toy. That was probably the only toy we had in the year. I can remember once my grandmother giving my mother a present for me, and she said, as it's his birthday on Boxing Day, I'll give you a bit better present for him. That didn't please me very much, but that was how my grandmother looked at Christmas and birthdays.
Well, now, Bob, you haven't actually come here just to reminisce or even just to sing a carol for us. You're actually here to tell us the Christmas story.
Yes. It was an angel first brought the news. God sent the angel Gabriel to Nazareth, a little town in Galilee. Now, Nazareth was the home of a young woman called Mary. She was engaged to a man called Joseph, a descendant of David. Well, the angel appeared to Mary and said to her, "Greetings to you, you've been chosen. The Lord is with you." Of course, Mary was very frightened. She couldn't help wondering what sort of greeting this was. But the angel said, "Don't be afraid, Mary. You've been chosen by God. You'll become pregnant and give birth to a son, and you are to call him Jesus. He'll be great, and people will call him the Son of the Most High. God will give him the throne of his forefather David, and he'll reign over the house of Jacob forever. His kingdom will never end." Well, Mary wanted to know how this was going to come about. "You see, I'm a virgin," she told the angel. But he answered, "You'll receive the Holy Spirit, and God's power will surround you. So the holy child that's going to be born will be called the Son of God." Then the angel said, "Even your cousin Elizabeth is going to have a baby, and she's in her old age. The woman they thought was barren is now in her sixth month. With God, nothing's impossible." So Mary wasn't afraid anymore. She said to the angel, "I am the Lord's servant. May it happen just as you've told me." And the angel left.
Gabriel, sung by the choir of Salisbury Cathedral, actually recorded at a Christmas celebration last year. Now, we shall be leaving you in a few minutes so you can find out if there's going to be any vestige of a white Christmas anywhere. But we shall be back again after the news with more Christmas songs and stories. Bob Arnold will be back too, and we shall have some more guests, among them Timothy West and Fiona Shaw, and possibly an extra special guest. So if you hear the odd ho-ho, it won't necessarily come from me. Meanwhile, we leave you with the sound of the bells of Coventry Cathedral, which, as we mentioned earlier, were rehung and rededicated this year after being silent for over a century. It's part of a quarter peal of Stedman sinks, sink as in ports, not kitchens, rung at the rededication service by the Coventry Diocesan Guild.
It's 5 to 7, time for a first look at the Christmas Day weather from Martin Rowley.
Thank you and good morning. And from all of us here at London Weather Centre, a very happy Christmas. The weather's certainly mild. Temperatures now already up to the normal values for late December, and mild, unsettled weather looks set to continue for a day or two yet. For a little more detail, for England, Wales, the Channel Islands and the Isle of Man, and some southern counties of England, there's some fog patches to watch out for. They'll clear fairly readily, I think. And a lot of dry and reasonably fine weather today, and there'll be sunshine too. But there will be showers scattered about, more especially this morning, particularly near western and southern coastal regions, but they should disappear by the afternoon. It'll be a mild day, temperatures between 9 and 11 Celsius, and a moderate to fresh southwest breeze. After dark, there'll be dry weather in many places to begin with, and certainly in eastern and central areas, there'll be largely clear skies for a while and light winds, so you could even have a scraping of ground frost. In the west, though, already cloudy through the evening, and this cloud tended to spill across to most places by dawn, bringing rain, some of the rain in the north and west quite heavy. Of Scotland and Northern Ireland, well, in last night's rains, just clearing the northeast of Scotland, in Orkney and Shetland, you'll keep it until about mid-morning. But a breezy, a showery day in the west of Scotland and across the north coast of Northern Ireland, the showers heavy and squally when they do turn up. It'll also be very windy in these areas. Many southern and eastern areas of Scotland and Northern Ireland, mostly dry today, just a risk of a shower, and some winter sunshine. Temperatures again in the mild category, 8 to 10 Celsius, but here it will be rather windy. Late this afternoon, cloud and persistent rain reaching western parts of Northern Ireland, and during the night, this rain, some of it quite heavy, spreading to all of Northern Ireland and Scotland, with hills and coast shrouded in fog. There'll be strong to gale force southerly winds brewing up as well. Looking ahead to Boxing Day, well, cloudy, wet weather across England and Wales, followed by brighter, showery weather, which will already be in Scotland and Northern Ireland, and some strong or even gale-force southerly winds. And that's the forecast.
The news follows in a couple of minutes, and then this Christmas morning we'll be rejoining Gerald Priestland and John Timpson until 8 o'clock. And now let's take a quick look at what else is happening in the early part of the day. And at 8:05, a huge treat for Archers fans when Walter Gabriel and Tom Forrest will be in nostalgic mood. They'll be remembering how Dreamboat Arthur Perkins swept Mrs. P off her feet, and she seemed lost to Walter forever. They'll be recording Nelson Gabriel's imprisonment and trial, and rejoicing in the day that Mrs. Perkins finally came back to Ambridge. Don't miss this taste of vintage Archers from 8:05 this morning. After that, Colin Semper stars as himself in a dramatic reconstruction of how he learned to believe in angels, featuring Barry Foster, Ian Cuthbertson, Peter McHenry and Terry Molloy. Then following the news at 9, Eleanor has a few tips on what she regards as the proper way to spend the rest of your day.
I mean, no opening of stockings till 7:30, breakfast at 8:30, church at 10, lunch on the dot of 1, all cleared away by 3 in time for the Queen, a brisk walk, then under the tree presents, party games and stimulating conversation in the evening, cold ham and mince pies at an early bed by 10:30. That is the correct Christmas Day timetable.
Eleanor in full spate in today's Christmas slice of life after Henry. But as ever, her ideas don't entirely match those of the rest of the family.
My way is the best way.
Yes, Mother, I know that has been the basic belief of your whole life. And I know you followed it in a way that makes Frank Sinatra sound positively unsure of himself. But there are certain points on which this Christmas Day may diverge from your blueprint.
Oh, dear, what sort of points?
Well, for example, I don't think the three of us will be able to get through the whole day without watching television.
Sarah, if God had intended people to watch television at Christmas, he'd have put a set next to the manger in Bethlehem.
Oh, Mother, don't be ridiculous. Anyway, you always watch television at Christmas.
Only when forced to. When my daughter makes me slump in front of some tawdry sitcom, I have little choice.
You watch The Queen from choice?
That is different, Sarah. I don't watch The Queen because she's on television. I watch her because she's the Queen. And if you can't tell the difference between the Queen and a sitcom, then I don't hold out much hope for you. Mother!
The season of relative goodwill, Brunella Scales and Joan Sanderson, with Jerry Carper as Claire, in a special Christmas edition of After Henry at 9:05. The Queen speaks to the Commonwealth at 9:30, and our morning service for Christmas Day at 9:35 comes from Christ Church, Clifton, in Bristol. And that's the early part of Christmas morning ahead, here on Radio 4.
I saw bridges come sailing in on Christmas Day, on Christmas Day. I saw bridges come sailing in on Christmas Day in the morning. And what was in the chancel tree on Christmas Day, on Christmas Day? And what was in the chancel tree on Christmas Day in the morning? Our Savior Christ and His Lady on Christmas Day, on Christmas Day. Our Savior Christ and His Lady on Christmas Day in the morning. They wave the bells of Chesterfield on Christmas Day, on Christmas Day. They wave the bells of Chesterfield on Christmas Day in the morning. Our Savior lives to Bethlehem on Christmas Day, on Christmas Day. Our Savior lives to Bethlehem on Christmas Day in the morning. And all the bells of Bethlehem on Christmas Day, on Christmas Day. And all the bells of Bethlehem on Christmas Day in the morning. And all the angels in Christmas sing on Christmas Day, on Christmas Day. And all the angels in Christmas sing on Christmas Day in the morning. And all the souls of Bethlehem sing on Christmas Day.
And welcome back to the BBC's Palace of Broadcasting at Pebble Mill, Birmingham, on Christmas Day in the morning, with the boys of Coventry Cathedral Choir, me, Gerald Priestland, and him, John Timpson.
And we have to confess that since Birmingham is about as far from the sea as you can get in this country, we haven't actually seen three ships a-sailing yet, but I can assure you we have seen the choir, very much so. They're with us here in the studio. So is Bob Arnold on a brief furlough for the Archers. And we're also going to be joined by Timothy West, who is now fully rehabilitated after deputising for Mr. Gorbachev in the television Reykjavik summit, and Fiona Shaw, one of the rising stars of the Royal Shakespeare Company.
Ahead of us, too, lie bells and carols, a traveller off to a far country bearing gifts, a visit from a very important person, and, as a change from the news, Bob Arnold with the good news.
Now, Caesar Augustus ordered the census of the whole Roman Empire. With the first census since Quirinius became governor of Syria, so everyone had to go to their own town to register. Joseph, who was descended from King David, had to travel from Nazareth to the town of Bethlehem in Judea. He decided to take Mary with him, even though she was expecting a child by then. But while they were still in Bethlehem, the time came for the baby to be born. So that's where Mary had her baby, a little son. There wasn't any room for them at the inn, so she wrapped him in strips of cloth and put him in a manger. The same night, there were some shepherds camping out in the fields nearby, looking after their flocks. Suddenly, an angel of God appeared, and the glory of God lit up the whole sky. Of course, the shepherds were terrified. But the angel said to them, "There's no need to be afraid. I've got good news for you and all people. Today, in Bethlehem, a Saviour was born for you. A Saviour who is Christ the Lord. And this will be your proof. You'll find the baby wrapped in strips of cloth and lying in a manger." All at once the sky was filled with the hosts of heaven, worshipping and praising God. "Glory to God in the highest," they cried, "and peace to his people on earth." Well, after the angels had gone, the shepherds couldn't wait to go to Bethlehem and see the great event God had told them of. They hurried off to the town and found Mary and Joseph with a baby lying in the manger. When they'd seen the child, they started telling everyone what the angel had said about him. And people were amazed at the story. But Mary kept everything to herself, though she often wondered about it all. As for the shepherds, they went back to the fields, rejoicing and praising God for the things that they'd seen and heard. It had been just as the angels had told them.
Away in a Major, sung by the Cambridge Singers, and the story of the Nativity was told by Bob Arnold. And it's Nettie, you'll be able to hear Bob again in about an hour's time. His leave from the Archers was short-lived. He's back in a vintage programme of the Archers after the 8 o'clock news.
Looking after the game birds, no doubt. Watch out pheasants. I must say, when I listen to that choir singing, it brings back to memory so many Christmases past, and some of them rather strange ones for me, particularly when I was living and working abroad. I suppose the oddest Christmas I ever had was, what, it must have been 1955 or 56, when I was living with my wife and our first two children in New Delhi. And one of my wife's brothers was working as a medical missionary in Pakistan. So came Christmas, and we packed up all sorts of goodies that he couldn't get out there, like bacon and Scotch whiskey, and crossed the border and went to visit Brother Bill. And we had the most amazing Christmas because we climbed aboard camels and rode over the desert to visit the scattered Christian villages there. I don't know if you've ever ridden on a camel, John.
Only at the zoo, I'm afraid.
They are the most uncomfortable form of transport ever invented, and I think they're rather revolting animals. They suffer from incontinence at one end and halitosis at the other, and they proceed like very short boats in a very rough sea. However, we went around these villages holding little services, and it was all very touching. And then from there, we went on to Washington, where we had these great glittering American Christmases. And I think the most memorable thing about those was the way local churches would buy up a small plantation of Christmas trees, and members of the congregation would go out and fell their own Christmas tree. It was really rather lovely to go out, especially if there was snow on the ground, with a little sort of bush saw or a hatchet, and choose your own Christmas tree and fell it and bring it home in triumph on the roof of the family station wagon. And even in Washington, unexpectedly perhaps, there were bells. Carillon of the National Cathedral in Washington, playing a trifle inappropriately, perhaps, Au Pres de ma Blonde, the carillon, a certain Richard Strauss, but not, I think, the Richard Strauss. It evokes nostalgia for me because the cathedral stood right at the bottom of my garden when I lived in Washington as the BBC's correspondent. It's a huge piece of textbook Gothic, which has only just been completed, I think, after some 80 years of building. Very English in style, essentially Anglican in the way it's conducted. I have to confess I don't really care for tunes played on bells, the overtones clash, so thank goodness Washington National Cathedral does also have a proper set for change ringing. And when they were dedicated in the Gloria in Excelsis Tower, the first 10 bell peal was rung by English ringers. And one of them, Peter Staniforth, has lent us this recording of the occasion. They're ringing a quarter peal of Stedman Caters.
Thank you.
Washington Cathedral. Well, now, let's give a thought to the people who will be on the move this Christmas. A lot of people will be, of course. It's only to visit Granny up the road. But some have much further to travel. And in the case of Hilary Layton, she's had to make a 26-hour journey to join her boyfriend, Chris Atkins, because Chris is a field officer with voluntary service overseas, based in Fiji. A place you're very familiar with. You were there at least a week, I think, Jerry.
Oh, you were better than you. Only there for 2 days.
Yes, we're both authorities on it. I can only remember that filthy stuff we had to drink there, which I think is extremely valuable.
Oh, Yangona, which is made out of old dried-up dishcloths.
And socks. Yes,
that's right. Pounded.
I watched the Queen drink
not,
it. When...
Not actually chewed by royal princesses and spat into the bowl, but something like
it. It was drunk by the Queen with manifest enjoyment, I think, a most marvellous performance. Anyway, one of the problems that Hilary had was what to pack. She finished up with very few personal belongings because her colleagues at the VSO press office loaded her up with all manner of medical supplies and gifts for the VSO workers out in Fiji. Well, John Newbury met her at Heathrow Airport and asked her what she'd managed to find space for to give to her boyfriend Chris.
Well, a couple of books and things like that, but also I've got him a very festive pair of boxer shorts with holly all over them, a sort of Christmas joke.
Yes, I think we'll draw a veil over that. What else are you taking out? I gather, in the case, there are some other presents for him.
Yes, and some for me as well. My family have loaded me up with a few things to open there.
I hope you don't know what those are.
Well, I haven't shaken too many of them, but I suspect there are a couple of small Christmas puddings in there to remind us of England while we're basking in the sunshine.
And more presents for Chris from you?
Just little things, toiletries, and also a sharp kitchen knife that he's a very good cook, so he asked me to bring that out as well.
What do you think he may cook you on Christmas Day? Or are you going to do the cooking?
Well, it'll probably be a shared job. I was hoping some wonderful traditional Fiji dish. We might get that, but he did say something about a turkey, which rather amazed me. But I gather the best mango tree is going to be ripe as I arrive.
Yes, I'm feeling very envious already. Now, I gather you've also taken out something that you always use at this time of the year.
Yes, I have a big advent calendar with a huge Father Christmas in a sleigh with lots of presents, and one opens the doors on all the presents.
What would you normally be doing, and what do you think you're going to most miss on Christmas Day in Fiji?
Well, I suppose one would most miss one's family, because it's a very family time. On Christmas Day at home, we get up and go to church and have a big lunch and drink and eat and open presents under the Christmas tree and so on. In Fiji, well, we'll go to church in the morning, I expect, and then probably sit by the edge of the sea eating our lunch in the hot sunshine.
If it's not raining, I gather it could be wet, and if not cyclones.
It is the cyclone season, yes, so we have to be prepared to batten things down if there's a cyclone warning here.
Well, I think now we better get these presents checked in, so if it's all right with you, we'll go over to the check-in desk and see the presents safely on their way, OK?
Yes, thank you.
Hello. Can I have your tickets and passport, please? Thank you. Thank you. The visa, that's lovely. Thank you very much. How much baggage do you have?
Just one suitcase.
One suitcase. Okay. Do you want to put it on the scales?
Jolly heavy.
Right, now I think you're within the weight limit, 20.4 kilograms it says on the scale. Okay?
Okay, that's fine, thank you.
Right, so that's the label on it. Okay, so looks all safe to you, does it, Hilary?
Yes, I hope it arrives.
You mentioned that on Christmas Day you would normally be going to church in Britain and you expect to be going to church in Fiji. Can I ask you what Christmas means to you?
Well, it's a great celebration, Christmas. It's Christians all over the world celebrate the gift of God giving us his son who came to save us all. So it's a celebration of that. And it's a great family time, as I said, and if one can't have one's own personal family, if one's away for Christmas, you still have the church family, and the birth of Christ, if you like, is the beginning of a new a new family.
John Newbury was talking to Hilary Layton of Voluntary Service Overseas, who's off to Fiji. The Fijians, you know, they often say are the Welshmen of the Pacific, because they're mostly Methodists. They sing hymns lustily and they play rugby. But they're pretty imposing people. They don't look terribly Welsh, and they do have this tendency to remind you that their ancestors would have eaten you as soon as look at you. And until recently, of course, they were monarchists to a man.
Three Kings, sung on that recording by a very young Stephen Varco when he was a choral scholar at King's College, Cambridge, and he was singing there with the King's College Choir, and we've just got a most remarkable visitor.
Mr. Timpson.
It's a portly gentleman.
They told me I had to say, ho, ho.
Well, how very civil of you. For a moment I saw the red cheeks and the beard, I thought it was Brian Redhead. What a relief.
I think, John, there's one question we have to ask our visitor first. Are you now, have you ever been a member of Her Majesty's Intelligence Services? Because if you have been, we're not allowed to talk to you.
I don't think I'm at liberty to divulge this, Mr. Priestland. I have to tell you that I am here as a substitute.
Oh.
Because, as you will realise, it's been a very long night.
Indeed.
And Father Christmas has been extremely busy.
I can imagine.
Indeed. Even as we speak, he's over the other side of the Atlantic delivering Christmas presents to children in Washington, a town I think you know, Mr. Priestland.
Yes, indeed. I have very happy memories of it, indeed.
Well, it's still Christmas Eve, presumably.
Well, I guess so.
He sent me along, and he's brought just a few little presents. I'll be back to see you gentlemen in a minute.
What, none for us?
Maybe, maybe. Now let me see what I can find in my sack. It says here, Lucy Wright. Is Lucy Wright here?
And that's confusing, because you thought there were only boys.
Well,
in the
Lucy, there's a present
some
for
of the
you.
Boys have got sisters.
Happy Christmas. Very good. Boys, you've been sitting here. Your presents have actually been waiting for you, because I brought them in earlier on. And they're in these candles here. So, boys, one at a time, one at a time, come and get your candle. There's one.
I thought you might have to light the red touch paper and retire immediately, then.
And here's another. Come over and get them.
Do open them, boys. Let's see what you've got.
Well done. And start opening them. You don't have to wait. It's Christmas now. You can get on with it.
I knew it. There's nothing
wrong. Very good.
No, it's always the same.
Thank you, Stan.
Grown-ups don't have any fun at Christmas. I can't see what they've got. There's extraordinary things going on.
Well, how many more candles
have we got? Let's get one over and see if we can...
How many more boys have we got?
Daniel there.
Just a couple more.
Daniel.
You?
Come into the lion's den over here.
Now,
come to judgment, whichever
you
prefer.
How
you
doing? All right.
Bring your
what have you found
present,
so far?
Daniel. Let's see what you've got.
What's this? You don't know, it says BBC in the middle. Goodness.
Well, let's take a look at ourselves. Oh, you needn't bring them all, just a few of them. You don't put them all back, for goodness sake, we'll never get them out again. Just bring them over.
That's a definite improvement. A definite improvement.
Well, we'll have a dig in here.
What's this?
Exciting, isn't it?
Oh, dear.
Wait
a minute.
A paper bag.
A paper bag.
You know what you want to. Wait a minute. What's that?
There's one here that says Hillary Barber.
Sort of BBC frizz there, I think. Oh, there's a mysterious... That must be some sort of puzzle, do you reckon? I'm opening Daniel's...
Emma Wright. Emma Wright.
Coins there. You have a dip in and see what else you've got.
Yeah,
have a frosting hand in. That's the idea.
What else have we got?
Can you reach?
Here? Now, this one's for the conductor.
Oh,
of
an
the
orange. There
choir.
Had to be an orange.
All right, here you are. Happy Christmas,
a
Paula.
A paper hat. A mask. Gracious, well, don't put the mask on yet, because we've got a little...
Now. Oh, yes, another one in here. Oh, here we have it. Sheila Wright. Sheila Wright.
What?
Well, there you are,
chocolate.
Sheila. Give you a
it's a chocolate rabbit, is it?
Snow rabbit.
A snow rabbit. Oh, well, that's really enough. Yes, excellent. And a balloon.
Now, gentlemen, I said I was coming back.
Oh, it's Father
I'm
Christmas
coming back. Because I think
you've forgotten, John.
I think you've not been forgotten.
Oh, I say, we've misjudged
you. Down here somewhere.
Oh, a monstrous sock.
There you are, Mr. Priestland.
Magnificent.
Oh, for you.
We're going to get one sock in
now,
the order of seniority.
Mr. Timpson, I must tell you, we have searched high and low.
And you couldn't find a copy of my book?
And we've come up with a stocking the like of which you have never seen.
Oh, it's got... Oh, isn't that... You know, somebody gave you one of those years ago. It got ho-ho all over it, and we've still got it hanging up by the fireplace.
Well, now you've got a pair.
How very nice indeed.
A bottle of Chateau Pebble Mill 1987.
We'll suck that. We'll do a deal over these socks, because they make a very handsome pair.
Yes, what did you...
I have a T-shirt, I think.
I'll stop you an empty bottle for a sock.
A T-shirt which says BBC in the Midlands. What pride, I think.
Let's see how I can possibly wear this in Cornwall, however.
And here's a small flask of something which I shall not open at this stage, I don't think. But I shall look forward to that in particular. Now, I think we better... We're have a little hush at the moment, could we? Can you quieten down, boys?
Tangerine loose under the desk.
Now, Daniel, I think you've got something to do on behalf of all the boys. You'd like to sit down opposite.
Okay.
Draw up a chair, because you've got some special thank yous to say. Is that right?
Yes,
where you go. Have a bit quiet, everyone. Can you stop rattling your bits and pieces quiet. Just for a tick? Righto, then.
Christmas thank yous by Mick Gower. Dear Auntie, oh, what a nice jumper. I've always adored powder blue, and fancy you thinking of orange and pink for the stripes. How clever of you. Dear Uncle, the soap is terrific. So useful, and such a kind thought, and how did you guess that I'd just use the last of the soap that last Christmas brought? Dear Gran, many thanks for the hankies. Now I really can't wait for the flu, and the daisies embroidered in red around the M for Michael. How thoughtful of you. Dear Cousin, what socks? And the same sort you wear. So you must be the last word in style. And I'm certain you're right that the luminous green will make me stand out a mile. Dear sister, I quite understand your concern. It's a risk sending jam in the post, but I think I've pulled out all of the big bits of glass so it won't taste too sharp spread on toast. Dear Grandad, don't fret. I'm delighted, so don't think your gift will offend. I'm not at all hurt that you gave up this year and just sent me a fiver to spend.
Well done. Thank you very much, Daniel. Well read on behalf of everybody. And thank you for staying so quiet over at the back there. It's a miracle.
Do you know what I've discovered in my stocking? I've got a piece of literature here called John Timpson's Early Morning Book.
Well, how could that possibly have got in, and how could you have pronounced it so loudly for everybody to hear? I'm most grateful.
Well, indeed.
I hope you enjoy it, dear boy.
Well, thank you very much indeed. It says in the flyleaf here, first edition, very rare.
Yes. I shouldn't wait for the last edition, is that for you? No, I've got one more thing in here which I've been trying to get out also. Oh, it's wrapped in green paper. It's quite magnificent. What can it be? No less than a book with the name of Gerald Preeson inscribed upon it, entitled Yours Faithfully.
Which printing was that? The fifth or the seventh?
This is the flimsy version after the hardback ran out. Well, how nice that we've both been able to plug each other's books in this friendly Christmas fashion. What a surprise.
Agents must have put their heads
together. I've got one more thing here somewhere which seems rather flat and cuddly. And it's another of that happy green paper. Someone's worked very hard, haven't they? And here we have dark breakfast marmalade. Well, nice to go with my dark breakfast toast. So frequently burnt. Not anymore, I hasten to say. Back in the dark days when soggy, cold toast
was... I've
got
another little pot here, too.
A little pot?
Anchovy relish. Well, that's the gentleman's relish. It says you didn't get that.
No, I know. I got an orange, which is significant of absolutely nothing, except how very nice. What a kind thought for Father Christmas and everybody else on behalf of all the boys for helping us through this Christmas morning with this excellent present.
We've got just about everything except a partridge and a pear tree, haven't we?
I shall have to go home for that. There might be one lurking.
On the first day of Christmas, my true love sent to me a partridge in a pear tree. On the second day of Christmas, my true love sent to me two turtle doves and a partridge in a pear tree. On the third day of Christmas, my true love sent to me three pear trees, two turtle doves, and a partridge in a pear tree. On the fourth day of Christmas, my true love sent to me four calling birds, three French hens, two turtle doves, and a partridge in a pear tree.
Five gold rings,
four calling birds, three French hens, two turtledoves, and a partridge in a pear tree. On the sixth day of Christmas, my true love sent to me six geese a-laying, five gold rings, four calling birds, three French hens, two turtledoves, and a partridge in a pear tree. On the seventh day, six
geese a-laying,
five gold rings, four calling birds, three French hens, two turtle doves, and a partridge in a pear tree. On the eighth day of Christmas, my true love sent to me eight maids of milky
seven
six geese a-laying,
five gold rings, four
calling
birds,
on the ninth day of Christmas, my true love sent to me nine drummers drumming, seven drummers, six geese a-laying,
five gold rings,
four calling birds, three French hens, two turtle doves, and a partridge in a pear tree. On the tenth day, my true love sent to me ten pipers piping, nine drummers drumming, eight maids a-milking, seven drummers singing, six geese a-laying,
five gold rings,
four calling birds, three French hens, two turtle doves, and a partridge in a pear tree. On the 11th day of Christmas, my true love sent to me on the 12th day of Christmas, my true love sent to me 12 lords a-leaping,
11 ladies dancing,
10 women piping, 9 drummers drumming, 8 maids a-milking, 7 drummers swimming, 8
25th of December. My dearest darling, that partridge in that lovely pear tree, what an enchanting, romantic, poetic present. Bless you and thank you. Your deeply loving Emily. 26th of December. My dearest darling Edward, the two turtle doves arrived this morning and are cooing away in the pear tree as I write. I am so touched and grateful. With undying love, as always, Emily. 27th of December. My darling Edward, you do think of the most original presents. Whoever thought of sending anybody three French hens? Do they really come all the way from France? It's a pity that we have no chicken coops, but I expect we'll find some. Thank you anyway. They're lovely. Your loving Emily. 28th of December. Dearest Edward, what a surprise. Four calling birds arrived this morning. They are very sweet, even if they do call rather loudly. They make telephony impossible, but I expect they'll calm down when they get used to their new home. Anyway, I'm very grateful. Of course I am. Love from Emily. 29th of December. Dearest Edward, the postman has just delivered five most beautiful gold rings, one for each finger and all fitting perfectly. A really lovely present. Lovelier, in a way, than the birds, which do take rather a lot of looking after. The four that arrived yesterday are still making a terrible row, and I'm afraid none of us got much sleep last night. Mummy says she wants to use the rings to wring their necks. She's only joking, I think. Though I know what she means. But I love the rings. Bless you. Love, Emily. 30th of December. Dear Edward, whatever I expected to find when I opened the front door this morning, it certainly wasn't six stocking crate geese laying eggs all over the doorstep. Frankly, I hoped you had stopped sending me birds. We have no room for them, and they have already ruined the croquet lawn. I know you meant well, but let's call it a halt, shall we? Love, Emily. The 31st of December. Edward, I thought I said no more birds, but this morning I woke to find no less than seven swans, all trying to get into our tiny goldfish pond. I'd rather not think what happened to the goldfish. The whole house seems to be full of birds, to say nothing of what they leave behind them. Please, please, stop. Your Emily. The 1st of January. Frankly, I think I prefer the birds. What am I to do with eight milkmaids and their cows? Is this some kind of joke? If so, I'm afraid I don't find it very amusing. Emily. 2nd of January. Look here, Edward. This has gone far enough. You say you're sending me nine ladies dancing. All I can say is that judging from the way they dance, they're certainly not ladies. The village just isn't accustomed to seeing a regiment of shameless hussies with nothing on but their lipstick, cavorting round the green. And it's Mummy and I who get blamed. If you value our friendship, which I do less and less, kindly stop this ridiculous behaviour at once. Emily. The 3rd of January. As I write this letter, 10 disgusting old men are prancing about all over what used to be the garden. Before the geese and the swans and the cows got at it, and several of them, I notice, are taking inexcusable liberties with the milkmaids. Meanwhile, the neighbours are trying to have us evicted. I shall never speak to you again, Emily. The 4th of January. This is the last straw. You know I detest bagpipes. The place has now become something between a menagerie and a madhouse, and a man from the council has just declared it unfit for habitation. At least Mummy has been spared this last outrage.
They took her away yesterday afternoon in an ambulance. I hope you're satisfied.
5th of January. Sir, our client, Miss Emily Wilbraham, instructs me to inform you that with the arrival on her premises at 7:30 this morning of the entire percussion section of the Liverpool Philharmonic Orchestra and several of their friends, she has no course left open to her but to seek an injunction to prevent your importuning her further. I am making the arrangements for the return of much assorted livestock. I am, sir, yours faithfully, G. Creep, Solicitor at Law.
Thank you very much. That was Timothy West and Fiona Shaw doing the delightful performances in The 12 Days of Christmas, a wonderful correspondence created by John Julius Norwich. That was great fun. Thank you very much indeed. And how nice to see you again, Timothy. I think the last time we met was at a Christmas charity concert a couple of years ago.
You must
do something in between these Christmas appearances.
I try and fit things
which
in
one was Peter and which was the wolf?
Well, how are you spending Christmas? Are you working?
Pretty well up to Christmas, I have been, but we've got Christmas at home with a lot of family.
Good, good. And Fiona, how about you?
Well, I'm being denied access to my family. I'm working at Stratford, and we have a show on Boxing Day, Matinee. So that's the end of Christmas for me. I was suspended in Stratford.
Is this the taming of the shrew?
Yes.
You're Katerina.
I am. For my sins.
Great.
Fiona, you're from Ireland, I think.
Yes.
And you're Catholic. Is Christmas different south of the border?
Than the north of the border? Yeah. Yes, I think probably very, very. It's probably about 100 years older, apart from anything else, just more backward. And so it's very festive. It's usually centred around drink and religion.
Actually, in that
probably
order.
The former. Yeah. and there's usually, I mean, my family go to about six parties, the same six parties, every Christmas morning. So, you know, it's always a bit of touch and go that the turkey ever gets cooked and eaten.
Mm-hmm. I have happy memories of visiting priests in Southern Ireland and of an evening when I settled down by the fireside and they open a cupboard and a torrent of bottles falls out and they always say, my parishioners are very hospitable.
It must be particularly complicated getting a family Christmas with your wife on the stage as well. Do you manage to coincide these things so you do actually see something of each other?
Just occasionally, yes. We spend quite a lot of Christmases away from each other, and although that's not nice in itself, I sometimes think that when you're working over Christmas at sort of far-flung places, I was doing a film in Spain one year, and another year I was in Blackpool, where you do two shows on Christmas Day. Thank you very much. And don't get the whiskey open until 11:20. You sometimes get a better idea of the kind of communal spirit of Christmas working in and among total strangers.
Mm-hmm.
That's rather nice.
I ought to know the answer to this, but have you ever been involved in pantomime at Christmas time? Do you go into that?
Only in rep. There was one year when Derek Jacobi and I were asked to do The Ugly Sisters at Newcastle, and we were very tempted.
you turned it down?
We turned it down because it was going on a very long time, and we had other things. But I thought he could be the smart one with all the wardrobe, and I could be the one with all the Union Jack knickers.
Surely I can imagine Fiona as Peter Pan. Have you ever played Peter Pan?
No, I haven't. I'd love to play Peter Pan. And do a bit of flying. That, or I saw a little bit of The Wizard of Oz the other day in the Barbican. And I'd love to be a witch, you know, and fly. Anything that includes flying would be great fun.
I always wanted to be the front legs of a pantomime horse with Brian Redhead as the back legs. You're marvellous, isn't it?
What does Brian feel about?
You have any great thoughts on that, Jerry? Yes. With your height, you could be front legs and back legs, actually, just on all fours.
There's a long time since I've actually trodden the boards. I was once Radius the Robot in Carol Chapek's R.U.R. and frightened the headmaster's wife out of the hall. I was so menacing. It was my triumph, and I thereupon retired.
Let us return to the season of good cheer.
We wish you a Merry Christmas. We wish you a Merry Christmas.
We wish you a Merry Christmas.
And a Happy New Year.
We wish you a Merry Christmas.
We wish you a Merry Christmas.
We wish you a Merry Christmas.
And a Happy New Year.
Good tidings we bring to you and your kin.
We wish you a Merry Christmas
and a Happy New Year.
Come ring of the
mini-boot,
come ring of the mini-boot,
come ring of the mini-boot.
Cambridge Singers, we wish you a Merry Christmas, as indeed we all do here in the studio. I'd rather been hoping that they might be able to work in Ding Dong Merrily on High, because that's where I shall be in a day's time. I'm spending my holiday up by the Ding Dong Mine near Penzance in Cornwall. And yes, John, there is a Ding Dong Bell in Parish Church at Madram.
Well, there we are. That's very nearly the end of our Christmas morning programme. Thank you for being with us. And as Jerry said, we wish you, on behalf of everyone here in the studio at Pebble Mill, the choristers of Coventry Cathedral, Timothy West and Fiona Shaw, and Father Christmas, who came and went so spectacularly, we all wish you a very happy day today and a very happy Christmas. And we leave you with Timothy West reading the opening to St. John's Gospel, The True Meaning of Christmas.
In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. The same was in the beginning with God. All things were made by him, and without him was not anything made that was made. In him was life, and the life was the light of men. And the light shineth in the darkness, and the darkness comprehended it not. There was a man sent from God, whose name was John. The same came for a witness, to bear witness of the light, that all men through him might believe. He was not that light, but was sent to bear witness of that light. That was the true light, which lighteth every man that cometh into the world. He was in the world, and the world was made by him, and the world knew him not. He came unto his own, and his own received him not. But as many as received him, to them gave he power to become the sons of God, even to them that believe on his name, which were born not of blood, nor of the will of the flesh, nor of the will of man, but of God. And the Word was made flesh and dwelt among us, and we beheld his glory, the glory as of the only begotten of the Father, full of grace and truth.
Oh!
on Christmas Day in the Morning was produced from Pebble Mill by Shirley Scott.